I want to ask a few questions about a few of your neighbors, and I'll start with Pakistan. How would you describe your relationship with them?
It's a complex relationship. There's been a history of conflict, of difference, of alienation between our two countries. But what we have consciously done in the last 2 years particularly is to open up dialogue with Pakistan. You know, you cannot deny geography. As we have always said in our part of the world, we cannot deny geography. And we cannot ignore the fact that we have neighbors around us and we have to deal with them. We have to create a modus vivendi with our neighbors. And the same applies to Pakistan. We are committed in my country, my government, to seeing how we can explore the ways and means to create a normalized relationship with Pakistan. And what that entails is basically to, first of all, reduce the trust deficit between the two countries and to increase confidence in dealing with each other, enable the people of both countries to connect more easily with each other, to allow trade and business to flow between the two countries, because that itself creates a constituency for better relations. It's been tried and tested all over the world, and we don't see why it shouldn't apply to our part of the world either. And we want to build confidence, mutual confidence, in, especially in areas like Jammu and Kashmir, which has been, as you know, a bone of contention between the two countries. We want the people on both sides of the line of control in Jammu and Kashmir to be able to meet with each other, to trade with each other, to build better transportation links, and to decrease, you know, that sense of alienation and being up apart from each other all these years. And I believe that process, which we were able to launch over the last 2 years, has moved forward. And there are gains accruing from that. There is more understanding flowing from that. And I think if we can maintain that, we would have achieved a lot. But let me also say, as there's always a flip side to all this, and the flip side is our concerns about terrorism and extremism, which has flown in the direction of India from Pakistan over the years. You know what happened on the 26th of November 2008 in Mumbai, in the big commercial capital of Mumbai in India, where we had more than 170 people killed in the attack that terrorists who had planned this in Pakistan, who came across from Pakistan, launched the attack on the Taj Mahal Hotel and other installations and other, you know, places where people went in Mumbai. And it was a terrorist attack from beginning to end. And we have yet to really see a satisfactory closure to the investigations into that attack. We have conveyed and constantly stressed to Pakistan that it is necessary for our two countries to cooperate, and cooperate meaningfully in bringing those people who were responsible for this attack to book, to see that justice is done. And we are obviously continuing those efforts at this moment, but the people of India have still not received satisfactory answers to what happened in Mumbai and what and the fact that there was a Pakistani role in terms of, you know, there were Pakistani agents, Pakistani citizens who were involved in this cannot be denied. And we must see a satisfactory closure to that investigation, because if there is a repetition of that for the future, and that is why it's so important that Pakistan pays attention to this very serious request from India that we should see these investigations completed and those responsible for it brought to book. Because there are safe havens in Pakistan. There are groups like the Lashkar-e-Taiba, as you know, a group that is proscribed globally. It roams, it still is pretty active within Pakistan, and you have leaders like Hafiz Saeed, of the Lashkar-e-Taiba, who are able to move around pretty freely to broadcast, to address their constituencies within the country. So that has, that certainly rankles in India. And if you look, if you ask the average citizen in India, he or she will speak about their very serious concerns on these issues. So terrorism and violence must be contained, must be eradicated, must be eliminated, particularly within Pakistan, for our region to feel more secure, stable, and so that we can progress.
It's interesting you put it that way, because the organization, the TTP, and again, along with LET, routinely threaten India. And I think there was one earlier this week. Some sources of mine in India have mentioned to me that there was a threat against the Marriott Hotel. Mm-hmm. Threatening India and Indian business to attack them if they were to serve American customers. And everyone knows the Marriott is an American company. Mm-hmm. How do you handle situations and scenarios like that?
There is a lot of cooperation between India and the United States in the field of homeland security and counterterrorism today. And, you know, when incidents or when, you know, information like this comes to notice, obviously agencies in the two countries do remain in constant touch with each other, and there is information sharing and intelligence sharing that necessarily has to happen in such situations. So I want to say that this aspect of our strategic partnership is of very great importance, and it leads me back to that central point I made before, that the price of liberty, as Jefferson, I think, said, is eternal vigilance.
Yes. Back to the broader Pakistani relationship issue that you talked about a minute ago. You laid out what India's interests are and what your interests are. How have the Pakistanis responded to the overall interest of India to fix these things that are wrong, to set things right that have not been righted? What kind of response have you gotten? And you've told me that the results have not been satisfactory, but do you get the sense that they've tried?
Well, when you talk to the civilian government in Pakistan, you know, there is a dialogue between the Interior Ministry in Pakistan and our Home Ministry, which is like your Department of the Interior. And that dialogue has gone on, and there is a certain channel of communication that is now open. So we're at least dealing with each other. We are interacting with each other. And, you know, the people on both sides are getting to know each other, which is a good thing. I think it promotes communication, and it certainly enhances confidence in dealing with each other. But there are other, you know, sections of government. There are other wings of, you know, authority within Pakistan, as you know, the intelligence agencies, the army. We don't deal directly with those agencies. I mean, within the dialogue that we transact with Pakistan, it is basically between the civilian authorities on both sides, the ministries, whether it's the Interior Ministry or the Foreign Ministry or the cultural agencies involved in both countries, the consular departments. So that's the structure that we have begun to build, and which we will go on building. But, you know, Pakistan works very differently from India, as you know. We have been a democracy for the last 60 years and over. And Pakistan has had long periods of army rule, as you know. And right now, its civilian democratic government is beginning to find its voice, which we welcome in India as a democracy. We would welcome democracy everywhere, particularly in our neighborhood. And we will continue to deal with the civilian democratic government. The two parliaments are interacting with each other. Politicians on both sides are getting to know each other. So we hope this consolidates itself. I think this is a process that you're seeing. We don't know about the outcomes as yet. We should be sincere in these efforts, and it's necessary for that sincerity to be reciprocated by Pakistan. We hope it is being reciprocated in Pakistan. There has been progress. We don't deny that. And the Pakistani government has, worked with us in India to see that this progress is achieved. So I can only say that we must be hopeful, mm-hmm. and that we must look at these issues such as normalization with an open mind, mm-hmm. and that we should deal with each other as two mature countries.
It's often said that if you want to get something done, you have to get women involved. So you are an ambassador representing India, and Pakistan has a female ambassador here. Have you had the chance to engage her?
Yes, I have met her, and she's an extremely accomplished woman. And she has had a very prominent role in public life in Pakistan. She has been in politics. So we have in India, at least, we have interacted with her even before she became ambassador here. So it's very nice to have a woman ambassador from Pakistan here in Washington. And I think, as you rightly said, the women of the world bring to conference tables and negotiating tables, their own experience and their holistic view of looking at things. The perspective that women bring to many complex issues is important and inclusive. I think women are conditioned to have inclusive perspectives, to listen to solve problems, to build consensus. I think women are wired to be democratic.
I can't deny that at all, on any level.
Yeah.
So moving on to some of the other issues before time runs out, your relationships with China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. Let's start with Iran. Do you have a relationship with them?
Of course we do have a relationship with Iran, and without wanting to sound cliched, it is a civilizational relationship, because India and Iran have, through history, interacted very closely with each other. Our languages have common roots culturally and historically. People have moved between the two countries. We have a very large Shia Muslim population in India. As you know, India has a very big Muslim population. The Muslim minority in India is the largest minority in the country, and it's close to 170 million people today in India. We don't have the census figures as yet, I think, from last year, but specifically regarding Muslims, but we have a huge Muslim minority. So they have connections with Iran, and this is not a relationship that we can wish away, the India-Iran relationship. And Iran is a very important country in our neighborhood. It is a near neighbor. It's not an immediate neighbor. It's not a contiguous neighbor, but it is a near neighbor. And today, when you look at the situation in Afghanistan, for instance, it has not been possible for India to work for Afghanistan's development by accessing Afghanistan through Pakistan. Because the Pakistanis have not been exactly willing to do that. So we have had to look at how we can transit through Iran into Afghanistan, because to do our road building work, to be able to, as I said, deliver development in Afghanistan. So the port of Chabahar, for instance, in Iran, the development of that port and the creation of access facilities into Afghanistan from Chabahar becomes very important. So that, from that point of view also, the relationship with Iran is important. But finally, I also want to mention energy, because Iran has traditionally been a supplier of crude petroleum to India. Traditionally, the proportion of that supply has gone down in the last year, particularly because of the sanctions that have been put in place against Iran and its petroleum sector. So we've had to look to diversify those resources and to work out, new modes of payment, because you can't pay in dollars anymore. So we worked out rupee payments, but that still We can't escape the fact that, you know, supplies have gone down and constraints have operated in this regard. So we've looked to diversify those sources of supply. So that's, and as far as Iran's nuclear issue is concerned, we have been very, very clear and unambiguous in our position in India that we do not want to see another nuclear weapon state in our neighborhood. And Iran, in our view, should cooperate with the international community and the International Atomic Energy Agency to answer the questions that have been raised about its nuclear ambitions, because it is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and signatories to the NPT can develop nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, for electricity generation, for instance. But they don't have the right to develop weapons. So I think these questions must be resolved. And we certainly don't want the situation to escalate to a point of conflict, where if war were to erupt in that region, it would have repercussions for all of us. We have 6 million Indians who live in the Gulf today. And so livelihoods are at stake. And most of all, energy security also becomes jeopardized for everybody in the region.